Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS Market Moves Podcast channel. Joining us once again on this Thursday for this week's episode, glad to welcome back from Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor Shane Lieberman. Shane, great to be with you as always. Thank you for dropping by and for spending some time today with our listeners and our clients. Welcome back.
Thanks, Dan. It's good to be back with you today.
So a few topics we will cover for this week for our listeners, beginning with a couple of topics up on Capitol Hill. I do recall this week, Shane, we did see Supreme Court Justices Elena Kagan as well as Amy Coney Barrett testify before the House Appropriations Committee. Now, this was a very rare occurrence to have Supreme Court justices up on Capitol Hill. So what was the nature of their appearance?
That's right. These two Supreme Court justices appeared before the Appropriations Committees in both the House and Senate. And this was about not only funding the Supreme Court, but specifically getting more money for their security. It was quite purposeful that it was the two of them, you know, Kagan, who was appointed by a Democrat, and Coney Barrett, who was appointed by a Republican, to kind of make it bipartisan to lawmakers that this isn't, it should not be a partisan issue. And I think what they've seen over the past few years is a dramatic increase of threats to Supreme Court justices. I think in last year alone, compared to last year alone, it's almost 40% increase in threats. And that comes on the heels of the prior increase, which was 25%. So you see this great increase of threats to the justices. You've seen it also across federal courts, even though they came specifically for an increase to their security budget. They're also looking at options to have kind of a new screening area for people going into the Supreme Court to listen to arguments or just visit the court. So it was quite purposeful that they went up, and to your point, a rare occurrence. I couldn't remember the last time a Supreme Court justice testified before Congress. I looked it up. It was 2019, and while that may seem pretty recent, I mean, that's 7 years ago. So historic in some senses, and also very sad that they had to do this because of such security threat increases. Supreme Court Justice Coney Barrett even noted that, you know, she was wearing a bulletproof vest and her 12-year-old child didn't know what it was, and she then had to explain why she was wearing it to, you know, a child. So I think, you know, lawmakers of both sides of the aisle heard this with open ears and will probably meet the call to try and make sure that the Supreme Court justices have adequate security.
Yeah, unfortunate circumstances indeed, but positive that conversations are happening, and we did see that dialogue yesterday up on Capitol Hill. If we stick with Capitol Hill, yesterday, three Trump administration nominees had their Senate confirmation hearings. So, Shane, who appeared, and what is likely to come next in this process?
That's right. I think I'll start with Jay Clayton, because that's maybe the easiest one. He has been nominated to be the Director of National Intelligence. And while he did spar with some Democrats over the 2020 election who won, you know, he is generally respected by both sides, especially Republicans. So I think, you know, this will lead to him being confirmed in a short amount of time, especially as Republicans want to get the current acting DNI out and Jay Clayton in. So that will probably be the easiest of the three that you mentioned. The second is Erica Schwartz, who has been tapped to run the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control. You know, she is a career civil servant and has served in the previous Trump administration. I think most senators kind of agreed that she has good enough credentials to lead the CDC. However, there's some skepticism from both sides of the aisle about, you know, how she would react if, you know, HHS Secretary Kennedy pushed her on some of the things he cares about, like vaccinations, and how she would react. I think there is, if I'm to watch one person most closely, it would probably be the chairman of the committee, Senator Bill Cassidy. And as you may remember, that he lost his primary. So this year is going to be the end of his tenure. I think, you know, he has some buyer's remorse when it comes to backing RFK Jr. for HHS secretary. And I think this could be an outlet for that buyer's remorse. So, you know, it's not a done deal yet, but I think Senator Kennedy is a key vote here, and we'll see how he proceeds. I haven't seen him announce an aye or a no on this yet, but it's definitely worth watching. The third, Blanche, he is facing pushback, obviously, from Democrats, but there are some skeptical Republicans, most notably Senator John Cornyn, who is on the committee, and he, like Cassidy, will not be returning to the Senate next year. So, you know, he is feeling a little bit more freedom than he might if he, you know, was still going to be here next year. So I think Blanche has an interesting background. You know, he has not really served in law enforcement. He was President Trump's personal lawyer prior to this administration, and has been serving as deputy AG and now acting attorney general. I think, you know, it's not just Cornyn who is undecided at this moment. And if Cornyn opposes the nomination, it will not go past the Judiciary Committee to the full Senate floor. So I think, besides Cornyn, Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina also has some concerns, but I think his concerns may be a little bit easier to get over for Blanche, which is, you know, I think Tillis would like him to meet with some of the Epstein victims. So this one, too, is going to be some rough going, and I think we're unsure of how it's going to advance. But I think Jay Clayton is the safest of the three, and then maybe one of the others gets next. We'll see how this plays out probably in the next week or so.
Well, interesting to hear those takeaways, Shane, as the administration seeks to fill these key positions, and will continue to monitor the progression of this process. Maybe let's end today with geopolitics. The U.S. has been ramping up strikes against Iran up in the past few days, ongoing with potentially even wider strikes to follow in the week ahead. The U.S. naval blockade also took effect once again this week. So as this all continues to escalate, Shane, what would you say are the potential paths forward at this point to end the conflict? What might be on the horizon from here?
Yeah, this is very interesting, obviously, where President Trump is kind of speaking out of both sides of his mouth, right? And as he escalates strikes on Iran, and, you know, not only military targets, but shipping targets to try and put more pressure on, economically, on Iran. You know, I think he has also signaled that, you know, there are still conversations going on for negotiations, right? Also, he made note that Iran released a prisoner of American descent. And so him, you know, kind of acknowledging what may be an olive branch from the Iranians is a healthy thing to, you know, maybe this military activity being short-lived. However, you know, I do think that there is some more military activity to come. We're not going to see it immediately, you know, end by the time we wake up tomorrow. I think President Trump really wants to keep the pressure on right now and show that, you know, he is serious about not being pleased with the negotiations, and trying to put his thumb on the negotiation scale a little bit, and to see, you know, what he can else try and get concessions on. So I think this is going for a few more days at the very least, but we'll see. But the good news is that conversations are still ongoing behind the scenes, and hopefully they will lead to a resolution quickly.
Well, it does remain very fluid, as you pointed out, Shane. Encouraging to hear that the dialogue is still taking place. So we'll continue to monitor this and see how this plays out in the days ahead. Shane, as always, thank you for dropping by, spending some time with our listeners, our clients, keeping them informed on a range of key issues and topics. And as always, do look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks, Dan. Good to be with you, as always.
Thank you, Shane. Again, today we've been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Government Affairs Advisor from Governmental Affairs US here at UBS. And do want to point out to you, our listeners, that you can locate the ongoing Washington Weekly publication series, the latest edition, up on the website ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.